Hello everyone, it's Adam again from Ukrafort24. I'm here today, can't believe it, I'm at my 18th stop on the Welcome to Scotland series. We've had a lot of fun so far, been all over the country. And today, I haven't gone very far from my last stop off, I'm still in Edinburgh. And I've come to the other side of the city now to talk to Hearts and find out all the ins and outs of that great historic club in the city as well. And with Gordon today, Gordon from Preston Pants, and he's appeared as well. Gordon, I'll ask you to explain it all for me. Has appeared on Jumbo Fans TV podcast as well a number of times. Gordon, first of all, thank you for joining us today. How are you doing over there?
Madam, thank you. I'm very well, thank you. How's yourself?
I'm great, mate. I'm great. Looking forward to another fun episode tonight. But before we get started, as always, I'd like to just put a shout out to Stell at Shoot the Defence. Stell, without you, we wouldn't be able to put out the Scottish series. So we really appreciate all the hard work you do behind the scenes there. But hey, Gordon, you're the star of the show tonight. For people listening, can you just put Hearts into a bit of context for us? They are historically, you know, one of the big clubs in Scotland. How did they grow to become so big over all those years? And also, well, shall we say, where can we find you in Edinburgh itself?
Hearts have been based in Gorgie at Tynecastle Park since 1881. In that area. They've actually played at Tynecastle from 1886. We're in the sort of west side of Edinburgh, like you say, the other side from the Hibs. We were formed by a dance club and named after a local prison, or like a toll booth where people were executed, basically, believe it or not.
Bloody hell.
So throughout history, we were founder members of the Scottish League. Their first honour came in 1891 when they won the Scottish Cup. And then they won it in 1896, 1901, 1906. They had a team that were leading the Scottish League by a distance in 1914 when the local paper received a letter calling for football to be cancelled and called Hearts the White Feathers of Midlothian. Along with a rallying call from a local businessman, George McRae, the team enrolled en masse to fight the First World War. And as a sort of subsequence of their all-night-long training, they started to sort of fade away in the title. And I think Celtic won it by about 3 or 4 points in the end in 1914-15. It was a bit of a barren period. After that, they didn't win the Scottish Cup again until 1956. Although they'd won the League Cup in 1954. We won the 1958 Scottish League title by scoring 132 goals, which I believe may well be a world record for a top division title. 132 goals in 34 games. Again, the 50s and the early 60s were quite a good period for Hearts, but then sort of financial mismanagement and some very bad transfers brought us down. We almost went out of existence in 1981. Wallace Mercer had to come in and save the club in 1981. And by 1985-86, we almost won the title again, losing it on the last day to Celtic. A few of the listeners will possibly remember that, although being the podcast generation, I don't know. I can still remember it as a 13-year-old being deeply upset, but thinking that it would come. But unfortunately, a revolution hit Scottish football when Graeme Souness came and took over Rangers, and he signed all the high-quality international players from England because the English ban in Europe at the time, it was quite easy to attract them north to Rangers. And they started in between them and Celtic. They've won every title since. 1998 was probably our best year as far as a building of a team went. We managed to win the Scottish Cup and we got within 7 points of Celtic in terms of the title. 2006, we had another good goal when well, what listeners will remember is Mad Vlad, Vladimir Romanov, taking over from Lithuania. He brought in a lot of Lithuanian players, brought in a lot of really good quality players from like the Czech Republic, and Rudy Skatchel being the sort of standout from all of them. Fantastic player he was. He won the Scottish Cup in 2006. Again, ran Celtic fairly close, split the Old Firm, which was an unusual occurrence at that time, and managed to qualify, get into the qualifying rounds of the Champions League. Since then, Vlad threw money at the club, but unfortunately, banking was his trade. And when things crashed in 2008, Hearts obviously suffered the consequences of that. And it's been pretty much a battle since then. We're almost out of business again in 2012. We entered in administration. I think it was 2013, just come out in 2014. We're relegated by virtue of the 15-point penalty. Mm-hmm. Obviously, comfortably won the Scottish Championship, which had Hibs and Rangers in it at the time. So that was a real good achievement under Robbie Nielsen. And now that Robbie's back and we've been in the Scottish Cup final the last couple of years, although the league form has been patchy to say the least over the last few years, we just got to hope that Robbie's back and he stays and we make progress that he was making the last time and continue it.
Well,
that's 18-74 now as quickly as I could.
Yeah, you certainly did. That was 100 odd years in about 5 minutes. I'm impressed there the way you flew through it. Let's jump back there to the Romanov era, because that was quite a historic one. Crikey, I'd already left university myself at that stage as well. What were you feeling at the time when you first came into the club? Was it that kind of sense of optimism when the big foreign sugar daddy came in? And how long did it take for you to sort of realise, uh-oh, we got a wrong one?
Romanov was crazy. I mean, he tried to take over, I think, Dunfermline and Dundee United before us. And when he got into Hearts, he made all these crazy promises about winning the Champions League within 5 years and things like that. Mm-hmm. And you've got to say, I really felt for John Robertson, who's a club legend, goal scorer, who was the manager in 2004-2005. When Romanov officially took over, he didn't feel Robbo had a high enough profile, to take the club to where he wanted to go. So he appointed George Burley. And it probably divided the Hearts support to an extent, but nobody can argue with how well George Burley did. He came in and he won 8 games and drew 2, and then he was sacked before Hearts played Dunfermline in his like 11th game or something like that. He'd apparently had an argument with Romanov after a very comfortable 1-1 draw at Celtic, which is a good result for any Hearts team to achieve. And told them basically that if he'd played the 2 Lithuanian wingers, we'd have beat Celtic 4-1. So he was a bit crazy. I mean, when he sat, I mean, initially you thought, wow, what's going on here? He went on a supporters bus to Livingston, and all the fans absolutely loved him, worshipped him. We won that game 4-1, I think it was. Mm-hmm. He could do absolutely no wrong, and then I think alarm bells started ringing for pretty much everybody when it seemed that George Burley was getting a bit too much of the limelight, and Vlad wasn't happy, and he wanted rid of him, and results rapidly went downhill after that. And he appointed Graham Ricks, which Graham Ricks' history is his own business, as far as I'm concerned, but it wasn't a great history. Yeah. Off the field, I'm referring to, but he came in. It wasn't a popular appointment amongst Hearts. Then even when he started doing well, we'd just beaten Hibs 4-1 at the end of January in 2006, and they went to Tannadice to play Dundee United a week or two later, and it emerged when we're all driving up to Tannadice that Ricks had complained and had to tell Robbie Nielsen and I think it was Andy Webster, that he was leaving them out of the team on the instructions of the owner. And he was told basically that if he didn't do what he was told, he'd be sacked. So things started coming out then that he was picking the team. And over the years, I've bumped into people who were at Hearts at the time. One of the managers is a guy called Stephen Frail, who's now at Dundee United. Mm-hmm. He told me the story when Hearts played in Inverness. They're leading 1-0 at half time, and Andy Driver was tearing Ross Toakley apart. And the fax came in that said Andy Driver was to come off at half time. And Stephen Frail argued with the Lithuanians and Vlad's sort of yes men that were there at the time. Ended up taking Andy Driver off, and we lost the game 3-1, and that was like the final nail in Stephen Frail's coffin as far as the possibility of him making any progress at Hearts was concerned. So yeah, it was over the years. I thought it was some adventures, and they say he spent £60 million of his own money, and if he did, it's quite an achievement not to win the Scottish League if you spent £60 million of your own money.
Definitely. Something went drastically wrong if he's blown that amount. Crikey. I mean, these days, of course, you hear about all these, sort of foreign owners and the lot coming in. Officially, I guess, in the English leagues, they've got this sort of, shall we call it a police check or a decent standards check and the like, so that they don't avoid the problems that Portsmouth had around the same time, if I think back. What's it like in Scotland now for people wanting to buy clubs? Do they have to show that they are of good character and not likely to cause all these mad situations that we've seen in the past, do you know?
There is, yeah. There's a fit and proper person test that I think...
That's the one. I've forgotten Rangers, it.
I think Rangers, is it Charles Green has never been... Or is it King? Charles King, he's never been allowed to officially, I don't think, take over mm-hmm. Rangers because of his business dealings in South Africa in the past.
Yes.
So that would I don't know if that would have ruled Romanov out at the time. And there's actually a hearing very soon for the new Livingston manager, David Martindale.
Mm-hmm.
He's served time due to being involved with organised crime.
Mm-hmm.
So he's due for a hearing very short, but obviously COVID keeps putting that off, and they wanted to, he has a match against Celtic on Wednesday night, and they wanted him to have a hearing at 3 o'clock in the afternoon or something on Wednesday, and so that's been put off again because he obviously has to prepare his team for a game against Celtic. So
yeah,
that's coming up as well. So it's quite in the news at the moment, the fit and proper person.
Okay, well, I mean, yeah, being out here, we don't always get all the ins and outs of what's going on, so that's why it's great to hear it. Livingston, but I mean, that's a whole other story about what's going on here. I mean, could you sum up for us sort of how it all came about last year, and what was the club's stance when it ended up being relegated after all the COVID and the shenanigans, shall we say, for a polite word, of what went on back in March?
Wow, it was probably easier to cover the 150 years of our history than that.
You're probably right there. You actually are.
What an adventure we had in the summer there, yeah. Obviously, we've only played 30 of our 38 games, and we have been bottom. It's your individual's perception as to whether we deserve to be excluded, demoted, whatever. We're reluctant at Tynecastle to use the word relegated because we were put out by a vote, basically at a Zoom meeting. It was a tough one to take because we had lost the last game there at St Mirren, and it was a bad loss. We'd played really, really poorly. But just before that, we'd actually... Motherwell, we think, were third in the table. We'd just drawn with them. And just prior to that, we'd beaten Rangers twice and we'd beaten Hibs at Easter Road. So a lot of us believe that the form was picking up. The St Mirren game was a blip, possibly caused due to tiredness. I mean, you play Rangers twice, you play Hibs, then you play Motherwell, and you play St Mirren on Wednesday night. It's it's going to take its toll. I mean, we were an inconsistent team as it was, so there was probably going to be a blip or two, but we were due to play, I think, Livingston, Ross County, Aberdeen before playing every one of the other bottom five. Yeah, sorry, they're running the bottom six, the other five sides. So we certainly believed that we would have got out on the field. It may well have panned out that we never, but we certainly believe we could. I don't know if you managed to see the BBC documentary about Hearts out there. There was a three-part documentary which covered a lot of the having to go to court and Dundee's missing vote, which was an absolute scandal. They voted to, now my memory serves me right, they voted not to end the league, and then somehow they managed to lose their vote and then got talked into voting to end the league, or I think that's how it all panned out. Obviously, I mean, I'll be honest with you, as much as my love for football is probably above all else, I had a few bits of business problems of my own at that time, so football kind of took a back seat. So some people were telling me things that had happened and I hadn't even heard them on the news or anything like that. Mm-hmm. Like everybody else, COVID affected me on a personal level as well as a football level. So, then it progressed from there to Hearts saying, well, if you relegate us, we'll take you to court, which we did. And then the court session, I think it was, said, this isn't a court issue, it's a football issue. And the football authorities decided that we were going to be playing in the Championship next season. And that was basically it. We couldn't really do much after that, unfortunately. Take our medicine, I think, was one of the phrases one of them used, although I think there was a retort to the aloe when Hearts scored the third goal on Saturday. Somebody was heard to shout, "There's your bleeping medicine."
Yeah, that most definitely. I was talking to you, the Partick guys, just before Christmas, and I think they definitely felt the same sense of injustice about what was going on there.
If I can say that, I think Partick had even more sympathy from myself than even Hearts did. To be ejected, demoted, and now they can't play at all, which is an absolute scandal. To be put out of the league when you've got a game in hand because your opponent had a cup tie and you've already beat that opponent twice and you're only 1 point behind, 1 point away from safety. It just summed up Scottish football for me. They basically made all those decisions to ensure Celtic got that title and were able to represent Scotland in the Champions League. And they got their nine in a row, or their quarter to nine in a row, as we like to call it.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, it sounds horrific. Obviously, you guys aren't as, I mean, everyone, as you said, is affected by COVID on the, you know, on a personal level in particular. But with the bottom leagues being shut down at the moment in Scotland, is there a fear there that the Championship could be the next one to go? Have you heard any rumours about what the plans are up there at the moment?
I don't know if you saw the news at the weekend, but Ian Maxwell, the SFA the secretary, I think is his title, he emailed all the Championship clubs to ask basically if they wanted to continue. It was based on an article by John Robertson, our legend, who's a manager at Inverness at the moment. He basically spoke out saying that he'd suffered from mental health, he'd been helping players and he was going home and who was helping him, etc., which is understandable. It affects even the guys at the top of the game. And he's saying, was it fair that players had to do what they do just to get the game of football and deal with the possibility of taking COVID home to their families or bringing it in from their families to the so. But Ian Maxwell interpreted that as a call for the league to be cancelled, which was never the case. Scott Gardner, Inverness's chief executive, went on the radio at the weekend and he said that he'd read John Robertson's article and then he'd heard Ian Maxwell had emailed all the clubs. And he said, I looked at my wife and said, I wonder what clubs did that. And it turns out it was based on what John Robertson had said. So Inverness got the blame for it. So he was very unhappy with that. And he was on the radio at the weekend letting them know that it was not the club stance at all. So as far as have I got any fears? I mean, like Kieran said last week, Alloa's part-time, as are Arbroath. And I think you referred to them in your podcast with Kieran. That's definitely a big problem. I mean, they've got the money in place, I'm sure, to test from the grant that they received last month. But I mean, the difficulties of having guys go to their work, then coming in to train, and then playing football against full time guys at the weekend. I mean, it doesn't take Einstein to work them out that there is a problem there. And hopefully they can do their test and they can all steer clear of it, and we can get the league completed. Especially the way things are going. I mean, it looks like, I'm hopefully no tempting fate, it looks like Hearts are going to certainly be in the promotion position come the end of the season, or even whenever they stop it. Just hope that we do get reinstated into the Premier League, and would rather do it on the field than by a Zoom vote.
Yeah, that would be the worst scenario, I think, going, isn't it? When we fall back to the problems of 12 months ago, and we haven't, it shows that people haven't learned. You know, this one of the great options during COVID times is, you know, for society to develop, and with remote working and all of those other things that are going on now, we're seeing people adapt in other spheres. But yes, it's going to be an interesting one to see what goes on. But we're here today even more so to talk about Hearts. And obviously you mentioned the team in green from the other side of the city there as well earlier on. What's the rivalry like with them? Is it a friendly one you've got? I got Rob's take on it in the last pod. I'd like to get the Hearts' take on it. What's your relationship like with Hibs?
I actually thought we had a good rivalry with Hibs. it's a locality rivalry rather than the stuff the religious divide and the winning the trophies competition that goes on through in Glasgow. Obviously, we do like to win trophies, and I think Hearts and Hibs are about eeksy peeksy in my lifetime. We've won the perceived bigger cup three times. They've won the League Cup a couple of times and the Big Cup once. But when I was younger, we had a great rivalry with Hibs. The guys for Preston Pans would all travel up to a pub called The First and Last when we played at Easter Road, and we'd always go to Diane's Pool Hall when we played at Tynecastle all together, and we'd always meet up after the match. I think rivalries have become worse probably in all clubs since the inception of social media. And so many keyboard hard men that you didn't really want to, you end up unintentionally getting in arguments with people because of what somebody said on Twitter or somebody said on Facebook. And I'd like to think we rise above that. I've still got loads of friends that support Hibs. I'd like to think that they support our functions when we have them. We support the Preston Pans Hibs functions when they have theirs. It's a rivalry that's, like I say, it's football and it's local, and it can be fun. It's not as much fun. Like I'd like to say it's not as much fun as it used to be, probably, arguably, because of the cup final in 2012. Mm-hmm. It was such a one-sided cup final that I think their hatred of Hearts intensified after that, basically, because we keep winding them up. That should have been 10-1, never mind 5-1. although it's a hard one. I'm sorry, you probably have a bit of editing to do for that, but it's no.
No,
I got on with it. I think I got on with the guys that support Hibs, and we have banter.
Fair dues.
Yeah.
I've forgotten about that cup final. It must have been a great day to be a Hearts fan, definitely. What were your memories of the day?
Oh, that day, I can remember being people saying that they weren't going to sleep the night before. I work as a taxi driver, and I finished about 1 a.m. And I found myself getting to sleep easily, and I didn't rise to 7:30. And people were talking about not sleeping at all the night before, and I don't know. I think we had zero respect. Actually, the Hibs had a very poor side at the time, and Hearts had every entitlement to be super confident that they would go through and win. I think they'd already beaten them 3 times in the league that year. Mm-hmm. As I said at the time, that I was glad I wasn't playing Hibs of maybe 2000 or even the 2006 team. The Hibs of 2012 were not a good side, and they ultimately got relegated the same year as us in 2014 as a result of them sort of declining over a number of years. They had a couple of good strikers. They had Griffiths and Gary O'Connor up front, but they really had nothing else. And like I say, I was totally confident we would win that game, and thankfully I was proved right.
Fair dues. It was great times completely. I've lost my train of thought there. I've got to apologise, Gordon. It's one of those where my head goes ding, 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 ding. I was going to ask you about this. But let's say we spoke about Hibs there, but I'm also curious to know about your relationship with the two. I don't know. What do you refer to the two teams in Glasgow? Because I've heard them being referred to as a lot of obscene words. I'm sure you've got your own pet names for Glasgow Rangers and Celtic. What's the relationship like with them?
Not great.
Delicately put there, mate.
They're certainly not my favourite teams. I sort of refer to them the gruesome twosome, the uglies, the two cheeks of the same arse, if you like.
Yeah, that was the one I've heard most. the two cheeks of Scottish football.
Yeah, the old squirm. Yeah, whatever you want to call them. nothing complimentary. Yeah, the Celtic's got the obscene brigade, and Rangers have their own issues with their fans. It's a sort of thing that I don't know. I think hatred in football sometimes stems from jealousy. I would love to win as many trophies as they did, and mm-hmm. have seen the great players that they've had and stuff like that. But I really dislike. I mean, presumably you're from Sheffield, so you supported the Blades. I'm from Edinburgh, the east of Scotland, so I supported the Hearts. And like I say, I have much more respect for the Hibs fans I was talking about than the guys from through here that travel 60, 70 miles to watch Glasgow Rangers or Celtic. Mm-hmm. I've never been a huge fan of glory seekers in football. I've got to say that some of the things that their histories are built on, I'm not a great fan of that either. And there's a lot of hatred there through the religious divide. It's not for me, and I'm glad I'm a Hearts supporter, to be honest with you.
Fair enough, mate. Do you find that, I mean, obviously you said you're not from Edinburgh yourself, but do you find there's a lot of Rangers and Celtic supporters in Edinburgh?
There are, yeah. There's probably, I don't know, it's actually hard to tell. There used to be a bus full of Rangers and Celtic fans would leave here every Saturday through the 80s. But I think when Souness came and their rivalry intensified even more than probably the Hearts and Hibs one that I referred to earlier, they were selling out away grounds, which they weren't doing previously in the sort of mid-80s, as I remember it. Mm-hmm. So basically the local Rangers club and local Celtic club are maybe getting one or two tickets per away game, so that their buses kind of died a little there. So it's kind of hard to tell how many of them were going travelling to see them these days. But there is still a fair number. Yeah, but I mean, I mentioned that we have functions earlier on, that the local Celtic club and a lot of Rangers supporters will come along to support our functions as well, which is good of them.
Yeah, but definitely.
They're there to be slagged, comedians and stuff like that.
Of course. I wouldn't expect anything else. Any other clubs around the league you got a bit of rivalry with, anything there, or any good relationships with the clubs as well?
I don't know. I used to like, on a personal level, I used to like going to Dunfermline. I had a lot of friends that supported Dunfermline. That's just over the Forth. But again, they're probably like all the sort of clubs of that level, Dunfermline, Falkirk, even Alloa seem to be trying to have a rivalry with Hearts at the moment because we're in the same division. There's a wee bits of back and forward going on between the two Twitter operators there.
Yes, I noticed that actually this weekend.
But yeah, I like to go to Dunfermline. The guys used to invite me into Legends Bar, which is right at the back of their main stand. Had some fabulous days there. And I guess there is a wee bit of link there that we were both in administration at the same time.
Ah, right.
They actually had what was jokingly called, I can't remember what it was actually called, but it was jokingly called the Administration Cup. Hearts took about 3,500 fans to Dunfermline to watch a pre-season friendly between two teams of kids, I think it was disappointing from their point of view. They only had about 1,000 fans themselves that day, but it was a fabulous summer's day. I think Hearts won 2 or 3-1, and they paraded the cup like they'd won the Scottish Cup. It was actually a very funny afternoon to be in attendance.
Oh, that's beautiful. That's beautiful. Now, of course, home stadium. How long have you been at Tynecastle?
Tynecastle was, as I said earlier, was 1886, I think, it opened.
Yeah.
So, yeah, there have been a few years.
Yeah, no, not too long. I have to ask, have you done it up since you opened it?
Tynecastle's had many facelifts over the years. The Archibald Leach stands in the 1910s, I think it was. And that stood until about, I should really know this, but my old history is probably better than modern history. I think it was about three years ago they knocked down the old stand and they built the brand new one. The old stand was a fabulous piece of architecture, but it was just, it was too small. It was old and it was falling down, unfortunately. And the new stand's spectacular, but I don't know. I don't know if it's played on the players or even the fans. But we've not had such a good record in front of the new stand yet as we've had in front of the old stand.
Yeah, that's definitely true. Definitely true. I have to confess, I've only been past Tynecastle myself since the new stand comes up, and it certainly stands out on the when you're on the road going out of the city there. It towers. It looks very impressive. What's the atmosphere like inside the ground? I've never had the fortune of going in.
It can be great. It's loads of people have alluded to the fact that the pitch is, the fans are so close to the pitch. Mm-hmm. Probably best atmosphere since they opened the new stand was December 2017. The Hearts beat Celtic 4-0, which ended Celtic's 6-9 match unbeaten run. And it was just a fabulous atmosphere that day. So as far as the brand new stadium's concerned, that's probably the best. But then go back to the 2006, the night that Hearts beat Aberdeen 1-0 in the second last game of the season. Paul Hartley scored a penalty. We beat them 1-0. the noise that came out of Tynecastle that night is probably something that will live with me for forever. It was just incredible. It seemed like everybody was screaming their heads off that night. And we actually got a good compliment on Five Live when we played Liverpool in 2012. The commentator, I'm not sure who was actually commentating the game because I was obviously at the game myself, but I believe he said that Hearts have got in here 17,000. It sounds like 70,000. it can definitely generate a great atmosphere, that stadium, no doubt.
That's great. Is there anywhere where the fans, you know, sort of your noisiest fans, where they like to congregate? Is it behind the goal, or do they go on the side?
Yeah, there's Section G and Section N. Section N's probably for nutters, to tell you the truth. They may compete to be the noisiest singing section. They're the Section N and Section G are opposite each other at the side of the pitch.
Right.
They're the closest sections to the away support. It's probably the reason that they're the noisiest, and the kids full of youthful exuberance, they definitely go and they stand there and
what?
They're in a singing battle.
Oh, that's great. Lost you there for a second. I think you said the fans like to congregate there to have a bit of a singing battle against one another.
Like I said, I mean, when the Old Firm or Hibs visit, Section N, Section G, and the away supporters, they certainly create the atmosphere in the ground.
Ah, that's brilliant. Where did the fans like to congregate before the game? Are there any sort of must stop places?
There's quite a few around Tynecastle. There's the Old Stratford's Bar. There's the Tynecastle Arms. The Diggers is the most famous. Which is where the grave diggers used to go from the Dalry Cemetery, mm-hmm. Which is its nickname. That's called the Athletic Arms, I think, officially. But everybody knows it as the Diggers, and it was well thought of that you got the best pint in Edinburgh there. So that's well known. And they're talking about Aloha's pies earlier on. It's apparently the pies in the Diggers are absolutely to die for as well. A pie and a pint in the Diggers is supposed to be the place to go. I actually don't do much drinking before the games these days. Like I go with my dad, who's now 70.
Mm-hmm.
So basically, it's in a role reversal from the 1980s. I take my dad now, as opposed to him taking me. And so we don't really do much drinking because I think both of us at our age would be up and down to the toilet all through the game if we'd had too many pints before it.
it's the sad story, isn't it? As we get a little older, but it's good for listeners to know where places we do like the place to go to before the game, because it's the best place to get the atmosphere. The pre-match atmosphere is always a good buzz, and we do hope that. All of this comes to an end pretty soon, and supporters are able to get back into stadiums as soon as possible. Who knows when it's going to be, but it's good to know which places to go to. I don't know about you, Gordon, but I think once spectators are allowed in decent numbers, I think the pubs are going to be absolutely ram solid, and people are going to be pretty determined to make up for the last few years, or the last year they've missed out on so far. Of games. I don't know about you there.
Absolutely.
But let's talk about the club a little bit more though. When it comes to, say, away from the pitch, and we focus about game time and that, but one of the things, I mean, I've loved whilst talking to other clubs as well around Scotland, sort of hearing how the team sort of engaged the fans, shall we say, how they... You know, I've heard about clubs supporting the local communities during COVID and doing other things as well going on. What do Hearts do to support the local community up there in Edinburgh?
Yeah, in the last few years, Hearts have actually founded their own charity called Big Hearts.
Oh, cool.
Which was founded by, I think he was the SFA community officer at the time, a guy called Alan White. Forgive me if I've got that he founded it wrong. which is possible because he was the first chief executive that I knew of. But yeah, they'll do anything and everything to support the local community. If I can go back to when we were in administration, they were going round still trying to get anybody that couldn't afford tickets and things like that. People were buying season tickets to help the club out administration and basically giving them to Big Hearts to invite maybe underprivileged kids or poor families to come to the games. And in recent times, like you say, during the COVID times, as I said to you earlier, I'm chairman of Preston Pans Heart Supporters Club. So therefore I have a bit of a database and Hearts actually have my phone number on behalf of a few of our members. So yeah, I've fielded about four or five phone calls from Hearts inquiring after the health of some of our older members and stuff like that. So yeah, there's no doubt that they are staying in touch. I mean, obviously the player interaction has been at a minimum this year. They would always go out to like sick kids' hospitals, take all the presents. I mean, like say, that's by no means unique to Hearts or the clubs do that. But the players were, I know they were disappointed this year that they couldn't get out to meet the kids, but one of our members, they're called Leslie Ann Peacock, who actually works in the sick kids' hospital. I think she was a bit thrilled because she got to field a Zoom call with Craig Gordon and Christoph Berra and a couple of other ones who phoned in to speak to the kids and wish them all the best and say that they've not been forgotten about. Just unfortunate they can't make visits in person at the moment. So yeah, Hearts have always been a good community club. And Chalky, who did the Big Hearts, he's a tireless worker who gets out there and does stuff. He's actually been in Rwanda. Coaching kids and taking strips and that to them and stuff like that. He's just a wonderful guy, Alan White. So
yes, I've got to say I've been following that story on LinkedIn. It's absolutely fantastic. He's been out there in the last few months, if I'm right.
Yeah, he might well still be there. Yeah, the lucky man getting sun on his back.
Yeah, definitely, definitely.
Well, mind you, with the complexion, I mean, he's probably bright red by now, but he's he's a good guy. He's definitely a good guy.
Yeah, it's great to see things like that going on. It's, you know, all credit to them. It's absolutely superb. Right, one important question. Well, it's as important as you want it to be, but one I do like to ask and all my guests, and now it's always a bit nice, I'll be honest, when the fans are talking, because they give me the ones that the listeners really kind of, it gets them a bit more excited about. Now, you've obviously, Hearts been in the Premiership and the Championship as well, and you can choose from cup days. Could you give us sort of your top two or three places that you enjoy visiting as a Hearts fan? Maybe two from a supporter perspective and one through a kind of a location perspective, one where you enjoy it from the location side as well.
The away days was when I thought about, yeah, my favourite away day and always was when I was younger was Aberdeen. Aberdeen seriously felt like a day out. The bus would leave at 9 o'clock in the morning. It would stop somewhere and I'm going way back to like 1978, I think was my first visit to Aberdeen. And Hearts actually won, which was a very unusual occurrence back then. and like you say, the adults would get refreshed on the way up in Stonehaven. Then we'd stop on the way back in Perth, where basically me and the other kids had to make our own entertainment for an hour or two while the guys went and got a few beers. But as time progressed, obviously I got to indulge in the beers myself. So yeah, Aberdeen's definitely a memorable one. Easter Road is always going to be a favourite of the Hearts fans. We go down there, pretty much sell out all the time. There was maybe a wee spell around about the turn of the millennium where Hearts weren't, well, Hibs, in all honesty, were a better team than Hearts at the time. and we didn't sell out as easily as we usually did. But Easter Road's always a favourite one. Into I think there's no doubt that the two favourite games of last season were probably the two Easter Road for most of the Hearts fans. We won them both somehow. So I guess Hearts fans would say that's just what we do. And from a what was the other perspective you said? The
kind of a, you know, a more from a touristy perspective, you know.
Touristy, I mean, I don't know. Do you want me to go into like European trips or?
Oh well, we'll come on to them afterwards. Let's keep this Scotland now because.
I don't know. Like I said earlier, I really liked going to Dunfermline. Mm-hmm. For the reasons I outlined earlier, the getting into Legends Bar, having friends over there that I knew quite well, and it was just a great time. I don't think I ever came off of Dunfermline sober. it's quite a place. I mean, it's only a couple of hundred yards walk to the railway station from the ground, and oh my word, it was felt like a long walk.
How long does it take you to get from Edinburgh to Dunfermline, if you don't mind me asking?
From the centre of Edinburgh, it's probably about half an hour. It takes us about an hour from here in Preston Pans on the bus. If we're getting the train, you've got to obviously change at Waverley. So, yeah, it's probably, an hour and a half maybe on the train. So it's very local.
Yeah.
The closest. I'd have to... Between that and Livingston, it's the closest away game outside of Edinburgh, I think. It's a great trip, and they're a well supported club, Dunfermline. It's something we probably no touched on, but I really wish the reconstruction had gone through in the summer, and teams like maybe Dunfermline and Inverness. I don't know where Dunfermline were actually in the league at the time, whether they were even entitled to it, but Dunfermline, Inverness, Dundee. And Dundee United could have easily joined the top 12 and made a 16-team league just for this season or a couple of seasons to see how it went.
Yeah, it is an interesting one. One of the things I've touched on, especially with the clubs in the further down the leagues, is now the opening up of the pyramid. What's your opinion on that, Gordon? Do you think it's a good thing now that there's the flow between the junior leagues and the The SPFL?
Absolutely, I do. There's teams that, with all due respect to them, East Stirling are probably where they belong now. They're in the middle of one of the mid-table in one of the Lowland leagues. Gretna couldn't afford to sustain what they were doing. Brechin City, I don't know what happened to Brechin City. They punched above their weight for a while, and then they've basically gone through the floor. And they were the teams that got really got away with murder last year by there being no playoff. And Kelty Hearts and Brora were absolutely furious with how it all panned out. They were supposed to play each other to have the right to have a go at Brechin City. And you'd have to say that either the two of them would probably beat them. So yeah, the pyramid structure, it's got to be. I mean, England brought it in years and years ago. I mean, there's teams like, I mean, I'm showing my age now, but there's teams like, I don't know, Halifax or something like that. I still think of them as a fourth division team. I've no idea where Halifax are now.
Yeah.
Scarborough and all that, and Barnet. The pyramid's a great idea. If these teams disappear, if they find a level, and we get on with it, and that's, I think, a great idea. To have teams that knew they were in a league that was impossible to be relegated from didn't sit right with me ever, really.
Mm-hmm. And that's cool. So you mentioned there briefly about the European days. I hadn't prepared for this, but I've got to ask you about them. What were your favourite memories of those? And, well, first of all, where have you been with Hearts?
My very first one, my dad's treated this shows you how much football runs in our family. My dad treated my mum to a 40th birthday present to see Bayern Munich against Hearts in 1989.
Oh, that's so brilliant.
So yeah, me and my sister went to that as well. I got the bug right away. My sister maybe not so much, although she is a big Hearts supporter. So I've been to like Bologna, Liège, Mallorca, Basel, Liverpool, Tottenham. Shocking. I've been to Prague a couple of times as well. Nice. Mallorca is obviously the standout because we had a week in Magaluf while we were there.
Brilliant.
Which was an unbelievably, it was like 7 nights of sleeping, 1 hour a night because we were situated above a bar called Lord Nelson's and right across the road for the BCM Disco. And oh my word, what a week that was. It was difficult to recover from that. I don't know if I'm still recovering from that. I was in my mid-20s at the time when that happened, and I certainly couldn't do it now. One of my favourite away trips was we went down to Liverpool in 2012, and I think I was in a state of shock for about 5 minutes because we were leading the 6 times champions of Europe 1-0 in their own patch. They'd only won 1-0 up here as well, so another goal would have knocked them out, and I think that would have been the biggest scalp we'd probably ever had.
Definitely.
We went to another member one was going to Bal. I only got married on the 5th of November, 2004. And on the 25th of November 2004, we played in Bal. So I don't know what my wife thought of me going away within 20 days of being married to watch Hearts in Europe. And we actually, I think we were the first Scottish club. I think teams like Man United and Liverpool had went over there and lost, and we went over there and we won 2-1. Sadly, we didn't see it through because we got beat by Ferencváros at home in the next game. Failed to qualify from the group. It was an amazing experience. It was the only time I've seen Hearts win away in Europe. I think I've been to about 12 games. That was just an unbelievable... It was an unbelievably cold night, but it was what a celebration. It was a 3-mile walk back to the city centre, and we basically floated. It was just an incredible feeling to take on such a big team in Europe as they were at the time and beat them on their own patch.
Well, I mean, you said there is your only victory, you know, the only victory you saw. I mean, it just popped in my head there, you know, how much I love the ability to just travel to watch the games, especially when it's your team playing. You'll travel to the ends of the world if you've got the opportunity to. Do you feel like that? Did you ever once think, oh, it's another away day in Europe? I'll check, you know, we're off to Bayern Munich or wherever it was. let's give it a miss and we'll wait for a home game. Or did you think, great, I'm going to London, or I'm going to Spain, I'm going to Switzerland, I'm going to Prague, all my mates from football are going to be there and we're going to have a whole load of fun?
Yeah, I mean, every single time we're in Europe, we eagerly anticipate the draw and we hope to go there. The thing is, back in the day, actually, we were very fortunate as a supporters club. We had a European supporters club, if you like. We had which was more of a savings account. Mm-hmm. And we kind of had functions to raise money for them. And you may remember back in the day that when it wasn't the Champions League, you had about maybe 3 or 4 weeks between each tie.
Yes.
So whereas now, if you don't book it as soon as your team's through, you're basically going to be peeing through the nose with EasyJet and Ryanair and all that. Mm-hmm. But back in the day, you had 2 or 3 weeks to organise like a bus trip. I mean, I went to Munich by bus. I went to Prague by bus. I went to Italy by bus to see Bologna.
Oh, wow.
They were unbelievable trips, and they were cheap because they were easy to organise. I've also followed Scotland recently as well. Started off in the Bertie Vogts era, which was quite an era for Scotland. Because as soon as the draw's made, you know the dates of the international games, they're easier to organise. And I do love a trip. I've been to see rugby as well. I do love a jolly to take in my sport and a few beers in different places.
I fully agree with you there. There aren't many. There are a few things in life that can beat it, but there aren't many, definitely. Hey, Gordon, I've really enjoyed this tonight. It's been great chatting with you. People who want to get in touch with you on social media or anything, where's the best place for them to grab you?
Yeah, my Twitter handles, or the club's Twitter handles, like you say, is at Pans Hearts, P-A-N-S Hearts. We've got a Facebook page, just Preston Pans Hearts. Like you say, Scott that put me onto you. Mm-hmm. His handle is the Boys in Maroon. Mm-hmm. And we have had a bit positive feedback in the summer. Let's say Scott managed to get hold of a lot of players and ex-management's ex-players, and unfortunately, I think the other podcast seized on the idea, and they had better contact. In all fairness, they had better contacts than Scott and I, and so Scott kind of lost a wee bit of heart about it, but we'll hopefully be back to do something. Scott's a great guy who helps people with addictions. He's mm-hmm. got like a farm in Yorkshire where like people, it's not like a Betty Ford clinic, it's obviously nothing on that scale, but it's a similar idea. You'll take people with drug addictions, alcohol addictions, and so to do the podcast with Scott's they're few and far between, because that guy's just so busy and so wrapped up in what he's got to do, and it's all good. Like I say, he's like an Alan White of the addictions community. So I promised I'd give him a mention, the Boys in Maroon podcast, and hopefully we will be back one day. I mean, maybe one of the eight podcasts that Hearts do, they're now, maybe one of them will lose interest and there'll be a gap in the market that we can
I hope you guys do jump back in. It is, I mean, podcast has kind of gone berserk recently over the last few years, with people like myself trying to get involved as well. But
like I said about that Aloha one on Saturday, I found that really interesting, and I don't really listen to other clubs' podcasts, and I think I'll certainly be going through your back catalogue now and having a listen about the feelings of the guys at other clubs.
I've certainly enjoyed it as well. It's been great so far. Really enjoyed it tonight, and I'm looking forward to where my journey takes me next around Scotland. All the leagues are full of really great stories, really great teams. So it certainly deserves its moments to shine. I'm also looking forward to the summer as well. I think that's going to be great fun with the Euro chance. I'll wish you the best of luck. And first of all, to Hearts, hopefully you get back to where you belong up in the Premier League. Enjoy your time in the Championship. I think it's a great league, the Championship. I really do enjoy following it this year. But yeah, good luck, and I hope you get back up there real soon too.
Absolutely, same to you. I like to keep an eye on like Flecky and the two Ollies as well, and hopefully you can start climbing the league and at least give yourself a battle and chance of getting out of trouble.
Oh, thank you for that. I appreciate it. And that's it, everyone, for today. I'm Adam at Ucrafot24. You can grab me on Twitter and Instagram, and as Adam Pate, my real name, on LinkedIn as well. So it's our 18th episode of the Welcome to Scotland series coming to an end. Till next time, everyone, take care and stay safe tonight.